Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Audio Road. Welcome to Trends in Technology. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa Campbell is your producer and call screener extraordinaire. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show where we explore what's going on in the trucking industry. It's a mix of new products, new services, and new technology. We'll also bring you expert guests from all areas of the industry, such as Bruce Melanson on diesel engines and performance, and Mike Beckett on tires and alignment, as well as many others. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in with your question or comment. It's up to you. This is your show. Once again, welcome to Trends in Technology. And here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember, to talk to Kevin, press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Trends in Technology. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa's here screening your calls. We'll be here for the next hour, taking your calls and answering your questions. Tom Bach from OPS is joining me on the show tonight. We're going to be talking about oil analysis, bypass filtration, oil. If you've got sample questions, we can certainly answer those. If you've got specific questions about an oil analysis, we'll go over those. Whatever it is you want to talk about, if you're listening to us online right now, and you want to join the call, there are lines open. You can listen along right on your phone, 347-884-8327. That's the phone number to join us. If you're on that call and you want to join in with a question, a comment, whatever it might be, press 1, and Lisa will screen your call. We'll get to those here in just a couple minutes. Let's bring on Tom, welcome to the program.
Evening, Kevin. How are you tonight?
I am doing great. How about you?
Excellent.
Why don't we, since the podcast, we really haven't done the podcast before with you for the whole show, and it's been a while since we've done an explanation of what the OPS is and what it does. So why don't we just start with that?
Okay. Basically, what OPS is a company we manufacture fluid cleaning technologies. The ones that your clients should be interested in, your listeners, are the onboard oil refiners, which is the EcoPure system, or the OPS One system, which is an onboard oil refiner that cleans the oil while you're driving. So you can extend your oil drain intervals, you keep the engine running cleaner, keep the engine running more efficiently, and you reduce your cost significantly over the year.
Well, that sounds simple enough.
It's a simple process. Instead of changing oil, you change filters, take an oil sample, which is a key part of the process. The oil sample will tell you the oil quality, make sure the oil has enough of the additive package left and enough of the oil quality itself to be able to make it to the next oil change or the next oil cycle, say 20,000 miles down the road, those kind of things. And the oil sample will also tell you if you need any preventive maintenance, parts are wearing that shouldn't be, those kind of things.
I know it's always going to be different, but, you know, one of the things that people always want to know when I explain the system and why I use it, how long I've been using it, and they always want to know, well, when will I change my oil? How long? What can I expect? And it's always going to be different based on the engine, the life of the engine, the conditions the truck's in, but what kind of drain intervals can we expect?
Well, we've got guys going 200,000-300,000 miles between changes. The majority of our customers will go one full year, whether it's 100,000, 150, or 200,000, and change the oil at that time. But they can do it totally condition-based and not change it until the oil sample comes back and tells them they have to change it.
That's the way I do it. I, you know, as long as lab tells me that the oil's okay, I'm leaving it in there.
Well, you realize the lab looks at it in terms of viscosity, make sure your viscosity improvements are working, that your oils were still within the same viscosity range. You look at the acid levels and the base levels to make sure that the oil is going to be able to counteract any acid that does develop. It looks at the percent of fuel, the percent of soot, all the wear metals, all the additive package, to be able to tell you that the oil is of the quality it needs to be.
Well, you know, when I first started, I can remember when guys would just rub the oil between their fingers, smell it, taste it, and say it was fine. That doesn't work?
They can do that. It doesn't work with a damn, but they could do that. You know, and actually guys will say, you know, the oil is black. Well, it doesn't matter what color the oil is. That's just really oxidation and some dye that comes out of the fuel. It's the oil itself, when they test it and they put it through a rigorous test, they don't just throw it on a quickie lab type desktop test. They test all the factors in the oil and make sure that they're all good.
What you mentioned the OPS-1 and the EcoPure. What's the difference?
Well, the OPS-1 is the product that we sold originally, and it's a two-stage product that has a filter and then an evaporator, which is a separate canister. It's also a drop-in filter, a cartridge-type filter. We've improved upon that and made the EcoPure filter, which is a spin-on filter, and the head and the evaporator is all in one piece. So it's a little bit smaller, there's less plumbing, there's less lines, and you have an evaporator that works based on when it's needed rather than with the OPS-1, it's on all the time when the key is on.
So the evaporator itself is in the head and actually comes on and off as it's needed, not just being on all the time?
Correct. And a lot of people want to know why you need an evaporator. Well, the evaporator is going to take the water and the diesel fuel out of your system that occurs naturally during the course of the operation. When you're running along, you're always going to get condensation. You're always going to pick up a little bit of diesel fuel because it mixes with the oil. That doesn't burn. And if you take that out of the system, you take the water out, you're going to get less sludge, less oxidation, less acid because you need the H2O to mix with the sulfur or the nitrogen that's in the oil to be able to create the nitric or sulfuric acid. If you take the water out of the equation, you don't get that.
What if I wanted to put this system on my truck, and I already have, and I kind of know the answer, but for the people who don't, if I'm thinking about doing this, what's the cost to put the system on, and then what can I expect as far as some cost benefits and return on this?
Okay, well, we sell a starter kit, which gives you the system, the installation kit, which is specifically designed for your engine. It's going to give you two extra filters, two prepaid oil samples, and two UPS mailers to be able to send them in, and the shipping and handling. It's $635.50. And then what we also do is we'll break it up into five payments if they would like. And it comes to $127.10, so there's no extra interest. We just spread the payments on their credit card over 5 months so that while they're not changing the oil, they're saving enough to pay for the system. And what they'll save is if they're changing oil now, say, 10 times a year or 8 times a year, they'll get down to where they're changing it once a year, so you save the oil, the amount of oil you're going to be using. Plus, you also save the waste on the oil. You're also going to save on your full-flow filters because you're going to use those double the amount of time. If you use them now 20,000, you'll be able to go 40,000 with the full-flow, the regular OEM-type filters, because our filters will take out the smaller particles and allow the other filters to work more efficiently.
If you've got a question at all, if you're joining us online right now and you're listening and you'd like to jump in, we've got calls open. We've upgraded our phone system so we can handle a lot more calls now. You can listen right on your phone if you actually call in and you've got a question or a comment. That way you can join in. Here's the phone number, 347-884-8327. If you're already on the call, you've got a question, a comment, whatever it might be, go ahead and press 1. Lisa will screen your calls, or press 1 if you want to talk to Lisa. She's probably just goofing off anyway. But if you've got anything at all, press 1. We'll get to those calls, and we'll open it up to whatever calls. What are you doing? I don't see you doing anything.
I'm actually looking up an oil sample for a couple that's in the chat room. Tom, maybe you can help me with this. Loganville, Georgia.
Let me see if I can find it.
While you guys are looking for oil samples, I'll just do a little song and dance. Actually, I don't know how many...
Somebody's got to work.
Yeah, is anybody in the chat room actually watching the webcams?
Yeah, these folks are because their phones are dead.
But, okay. Well, while you guys are doing that, I'll...
Oh, I found it.
Since,
hey, Tom?
Since
I got it. Loganville, it's under GLR or ESTP.
Yeah, this is her first... Let me read to you what she said. This is her first sample for a 2004 Freightliner.
Okay, is it GLR, the GLR one? There's two in Loganville.
Hold on, that wasn't it. No, there were no numbers on it.
It's going to be your one. Kevin, while we'll
S-TAP.
Is it S-TAP?
Yes. Neil?
I got it. I'm pulling up right now. One of the things that's very important when you do these oil samples is they fill out the forms correctly. So we should discuss that a little bit while we're going through this.
Yeah, speaking of which, can you call up Tim over at Action Mobile and tell him how to fill out mine?
I think I'll go drive over there and show it to him. I think that may be a little bit better.
Yeah, I think you should. We handed it over to him because we're not over there all the time, but he's not doing a very good job of filling out the paperwork.
Well, I'll get on him and get it straightened out because it's very important they put down the unit numbers correctly, they put down the amount of miles on the oil correctly, amount of miles on the engine correctly, and they keep that unit number that they want to keep the history on consistent. If they change a number, make it one time and make it, you know, unit 72 the next time, the history of that engine doesn't stay on the same form. It makes it kind of difficult for them to look at it. So it's very important they do that. Whether they use it in our system or anybody's oil sample, it's very important. All right, I have this report up. What would the question be?
They've never seen one. They've never seen the report, so she has nothing. This is her first sample. So maybe just go over.
Okay,
what
sure.
They're
oil sample virgins, Tom. Be careful.
Okay, I'll start from the very beginning. On the upper left-hand side, you're going to see the information I was just requesting, which was the unit ID number, and that number that they have on theirs is E-STEP E, so that has to be actually E-STEP. The E is for the engine, so you always have to make sure you put E-STEP on there. It also tells you the type of engine. It's a diesel engine, and the application of it's unknown. It would normally be over-the-road trucking or local trucking or things like that. On the far right-hand side is the information that you provided or for your company name, phone number, who we would call if there was something that needed to be done. And then there's another block. On the left-hand side, you're going to have the date it was sampled, which is the date that you took the oil out, the date that it was received at the lab, and the date it was completed. Then you have a tracking number, and I see some information missing on yours, which is very important. One is the manufacturer, the model of the engine, so it would be like a CAT C15 or a Detroit Series 60. That's missing. So when they did this report, they really used a generic comparison instead of the exact engine. The lube manufacturer and lube type and grade is also very important, which is missing on your report. It's Shell Rotella T, Shell Rotella T synthetic 15W40, 5W40, 10W50. And the micron rating you have is 15. It actually should be 3, but that's fine. You have a full flow filter on there. So that's that basic information block. Also, the fluid that was added, if you knew how much you had put in since the last time you took the sample, you should have that information in there. And then on the right hand side.
How important is that? Because I kind of struggle with that because my drivers don't always keep track of it as much as I would like them to.
Well, it's obviously a big difference if you have an oil leak and you're putting a gallon in every 2,000 miles, or if you're using one of these new DD15s where you don't put a gallon in 50,000 miles. If you're putting a gallon every 1,000 miles, you're going to expect the sample to be a lot cleaner than if you're not putting any in over 15 or 50,000 miles. So it's kind of important if they have that information. If you're putting in, a gallon every 10 or 15,000, which is normal, they'll know the engine's having normal wear. But if you went 20,000 miles or 15,000 miles, you put 6 gallons in, this expecting a sample to be a lot cleaner. So it's kind of important that they put that in there.
Got it.
Then on the far right-hand side, you have the severity of your report. You're going to have the 0 to 1, which is the normal range. Then you have 2 and 3, which they consider abnormal. Probably the 2 and the 3 is more of a situation where you have to look at something to determine whether there's really a problem. I would call it a monitor type thing rather than abnormal, but in our particular report, they call it abnormal. And then the 4 is a critical, something that needs to be fixed quickly because you're doing damage to the engine. And then you get into the basic comments, which is what they found on your report. In this case, there's no abnormal findings, but if there were, they would say things like high aluminum, expect charge air cooler issue or something like that. Or it could say, iron wear excessive, check bearing, check, rings, those kind of things. So the comments is very important because they're going to tell you what to do to correct the engine problems. And also, if there's anything wrong with the oil, they're going to tell you it's time to change it in that space. If you're using the OPS system and using the OPS type report, we're going to call you and tell you as well, because anything that's a 3 or 4, we pick up the phone and call you. The next part is where it really gets interesting. Now, the first series
one,
of...
Tom, on the comments, and this is just for my information, I know this is obviously a lot of this is done with, analysis and machines, and there's a bunch of different tests that go on, and, the reports are we can view them online, so they're computerized. Who puts in the comments? Is that an actual person looking at the sample and putting those in, or are those auto-generated?
There's an actual analyst that's taking a look at those. Now, the statements are drop-down kind of things, so they're usually pretty standard. But they do have a person that looks at the reports. And in our particular instance with the lab we use here, the samples are tested or analyzed at – they're all analyzed in Indianapolis – but all of the samples can be sent to Houston or Salt Lake or Indianapolis or Edmonton, and they all that information is sent to the analysis people, and they look at it and they make the comments. But there's a drop down kind of thing, so they look pretty standardized because they're just clicking the drop down.
Yeah, they're not typing in every word; they're picking from choices, and that's kind of why I wondered, because I've noticed. You see the same thing over and over, but I also, it really looks to me like somebody's looking at the sample and making these judgments based on what I see.
Right. When you look at this here, matter of fact, this one is one that says data indicates no abnormal findings, resample at normal interval, because the oil itself is good. But then they went on to tell you that in order to properly compare it to the right standards, they need the manufacturer of the model of the engine, right? And the manufacturer of the engine, the type and grade of the lubricant, and the unit time that's on the engine, and the time that's on the oil itself is missing from this report. So they couldn't determine anything about the wear, which in this case there isn't any because it's pretty clean oil. But if there was wear, they wouldn't be able to tell whether it was a normal thing or whether it was, you did 2,000 miles, you did 120,000 miles. There's no way for them to determine that without having that information on there, which we'll get to. Okay, but in our particular report there, it's going to show all of your wear metals. It has the iron, the chrome, the nickel, aluminum, copper, lead, tin, cadmium, silver, and vanadium. And then you have contaminant metals, which are things that are either coming into the system through intrusion. For instance, silicon is sand, sodium and potassium are additives that's usually in glycol, but they could also be in the oil itself. So it's important for you to tell them which oil you have. So if that oil does use a sodium or a potassium, which are salts, to carry the additives, They know that they should be there and they're not in a contaminant. Then you have the multi-source metals, which are metals that you would normally see in an engine, molybdenum, antimony, manganese, and lithium, you can get some lithium in through grease and those kind of things. So they could be part of the engine, or it could be an intrusion, or it could actually be part of the oil. And then you have the additive metals, which are magnesium, calcium, barium, and phosphorus, and zinc, which are your base metals to be able to counteract the acid, and zinc is to help for rust and anti-wear. So when you look at all those packages, if you tell them that you have moly and you're using a specific oil that uses a high rate of molybdenum, they would not say that there's anything wrong. But if you're saying you're using an oil that doesn't contain any and it has 300 parts per million, they're going to circle that and make it a critical because something's wrong. You understand?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Now, the thing about oil analysis, and I've been doing this a long time. I mean, I put my first bypass system on back in 1995, and I do have to admit that probably the first 5 years I had a system on, I really didn't pay attention to my sample as far as details. All I really cared about was the comments. Did they, you know, were they telling me to do something, or were they telling me to, you know, move on and the oil was fine, and that's all I really cared about. And then when I met you, probably early 2000 or so, whenever you and I met, I started using the OPS, I got more involved. And then I think what really helped me a lot, though, was the new lab samples. I just really like these better. And since I've been watching these, I spend more time learning about, you know, all the different conditions that we can identify. Even though there's not a problem, I'm finding that when somebody calls me and they're having maintenance issues, truck's not running right, fuel mileage is down, they've got leaks, things like that, I'm finding that even looking at a normal sample or a 2 or a 3, nothing's wrong, the oil's still good, but I can identify a lot of things that are going on in the engine now.
That's correct. And you'll learn more and more as you go because I'm learning every day because there's different combinations of things that are happening now with these newer engines that they're putting out that are creating combinations we've never seen before, you know, like aluminum and potassium. You know, all of a sudden that's the charger cooler because potassium's in the flux that's in the aluminum in the charger cooler. You know, those kind of things pop up.
Yep.
So that's a
good point, and I don't want to get too far off track here. I want to come back to that, and I know you've got some more things you want to explain on the sample. But also on this particular sample, they want to know if they should do another sample right away because they didn't put in that information.
No, what they need to do is just give me the information or give it to Lisa, and we'll get it added to this. We can go into their account, and we'll add that information into the report, and if it does change it, then they will be giving them a call. But I can tell you from looking at this oil, nothing's going to change because the oil is extremely clean.
Okay, so then there's really no concerns now, but it would still be good to get the information in so that we build a better history, right?
Correct, especially the unit time, which is the time on the engine, which is the next category, and then the lube time, which is the time that's on the oil itself, because that's important. What they do with that is, if let's say you have 150,000 miles on the oil and you've got 150 parts per million of iron, they calculate out what it is per 1,000 miles. And if it's within the guidelines of the engine manufacturer, there's not an issue. But if the iron is 150 and you only have 5,000 miles on it, obviously that it could be outside the guideline. So they would definitely say something's wearing, it's out of the norm. So it's important that they have the amount of time that's on the oil and the amount of time that's on the engine so they can do that. Obviously, if you got a brand new engine that's breaking in, you're expecting to see higher wear metals. And if you've got an older engine that's already broken in and past the point where the metal's fatiguing, you're expecting to have higher numbers. But if you're in the middle range, say that 300 to 500,000 range, you shouldn't see that kind of wear. So it's important that they know the time on the engine, and also how much time is on the oil. And that's missing from this report as well. But if they give the information to Lisa, I can get it added, and we can do that for them. The next column is over. You have, the next column is over, tells you whether you change the lubrication, whether you change the filters. In this case, it shows unknown, which means they didn't check off whether they did is yes or no. They didn't put yes or no, because it's important that to see if the lube was changed, the oil was changed, and the filters were changed. In this case, it says unknown, so we'll have to put that in as well. But then it gives you the reports on a percent of fuel, percent of soot, percent of water. It gives you the viscosity at 100 degrees centigrade, which is important because they take the oil and heat it up to the boiling point of water to make sure that the viscosity improver molecules work properly, and it's still within the right range. So they're at a 13.5. They didn't see what kind of oil it was, but they're assuming that's a SAE 40, which means they're right in the middle range. If they're using an SAE 50 oil, then that range is too low, and it would definitely be a comment on here to change the oil because something was wrong. The next category is over the total acid and the total base. Now, we have them test the total base, because we want to make sure that there's base there to counteract any acid that develops. If you did just the acid, you would never know if you have base that's in the oil to be able to counteract it. So we have them do the base. Then you also have oxidation and nitration. Oxidation is a little calculation that shows how much oxides are in the oil, which also creates acid. And nitration is the same kind of thing. It shows you the blow-by that's getting in, the nitric oxide that's getting into the oil. And there's other codes on the rest of this. There's ISO codes and micron levels, but that's more for machinery, pumps and those kind of things that they do a special particle count test that you don't do with. We don't do that with motor oil.
You know, what I'm finding when I'm looking at samples is it's that bottom row of stuff, you know, fuel, soot, water, viscosity, TBN, oxidation, and nitration, that I can really start to figure out what's going on in an engine a lot of times.
Right, and those are also the qualities of the oil. Those are mostly the reasons you have to change. You get a stuck injector, and you get up too much fuel, and our system's not able to take it out. Or you have a bad fuel-to-air ratio or a bad charge air cooler, and you're getting too much soot. The soot gets up to a level where it's not the soot that's the problem, because the engine can run with, say, an 8-9% soot. Some engines, they say 10% is fine. But because that soot gets into the oil and increases the viscosity by a grade, they'll tell you to change the oil. And if you're getting water in there and there's water's not coming out, then you've got another problem that has to be taken care of, because some of that water could be coming in through the glycol, or you could have a serious condensation issue that has to be taken care of.
Got it. All right, Lisa, okay. Did that answer their questions? That was kind of a, you know, oil sample 101. Lisa's goofing around in the chat room, so she's probably not going to pay attention to me.
I'm answering more calls and looking up more samples.
Okay,
Kevin,
good.
There's one more thing that answers your question. If you look at the on the right-hand side of the report underneath the severity level, there's a lab number, which is the lab number for the particular sample. The next thing is location. H is going to be Houston for us. H is Houston. S is Salt Lake. And I is in Indianapolis. And then right next to it is the analyst who actually looked at it, their initials. So if you call the phone number that's on there and say you want to speak to that analyst who actually looked at it, you'll be able to get more information.
Got it. That's
hey,
very
Tom, what
cool.
What about the folks in Canada? What do they do? As far as where do they send the samples?
They can send them either to Edmonton or they send them into the labs in the States by when they're in the country, because most of these guys run back and forth all the time. Majority of them are in the States and just UPS them when they get to the States.
Okay.
But the Canadians can use the Canadian Post, and they ship it out to Edmonton.
All right. Let's go to a question. Are we done with that?
I think we are.
All right. Let's see what Hugh wants to talk about in Arizona. Hugh, welcome to the program.
Fairtex Now. Hey, Kevin.
Yes, Fairfax Now.
And Tom, two quick things about oil samples. I kind of joined the show late, so I haven't heard everything. But number one, I know there are tests that you can do using dynos and such to check for blow-by. But will an oil sample tell you if you're getting blow-by or excessive blow-by?
It will. It will see signs of nitration increases, and you should see signs of soot increases, and you should see signs of fuel increases.
Ah, okay.
So because the unburned fuel is blown by the rings.
So if I don't see any of those, then it's probably I don't need to test for blow-by. Or am I reading you wrong?
I would say that's probably correct.
Yeah, that's correct. That's one of the things I'm learning more and more is that if we have an engine with excessive blow-by, we really can pick it up in the sample. And one of the things, you know, that I'm telling people to do to help us identify engine problems now, and people call in and they've got these, you know, something isn't broke, but something isn't exactly right either. The engine's not running exactly right. They're fuel mileage has gone down. One of the things I'm telling them, whether they've got a any kind of a bypass system or purifier or not, is let's get a full service sample, and we might be able to figure out what's going on in the engine just from some of the clues we see in the sample.
Correct. You have to remember, if you have blow by, you're getting less compression in the chamber because the compression is blowing by the rings, and while it's doing that, it's taking fuel with it on the intake stroke, and it's also taking exhaust with it on the exhaust stroke. So both of those things, the soot, the fuel, are going to show up in the oil, and nitration is going to show up from the nitric oxide that's coming in with the gases.
Gotcha. And number two, you know, I'm on my fourth truck, and I've actually lost two engines before I started sampling. Will the sample tell me when it's time for a rebuild?
Yes and no.
I run old, high-mileage trucks, and my fuel samples keep telling me, well, your truck looks like it's supposed to look, you know, with 850,000 miles on it.
Well, that's, you know, that's probably true. If you listened before, I was saying how they take the wear and do it by the amount of miles that's between the last sample to this sample to see what that wear pattern is and the amount of iron and lead and aluminum and chromium and everything you have. And if it's within the guidelines, they're going to say it's okay. If it's 800,000 miles, they're expecting it to be higher. So it's still in that guideline and it's fatiguing. You know, usually when the rebuild time comes, it's because the metals are fatigued to the point where they can't take stresses anymore.
Gotcha. I appreciate that, Tom. Have a good night.
Enjoy it.
All right. That means I have to do something. Hold on a second here. I was, you caught me not paying attention. I was paying attention, but I wasn't ready to switch calls. But I know I saw another question here, except I think Lisa's on the phone. Oh, no, here we go. Lewis with a question on samples. Let me get back to it. There we go. Lewis, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
All right, go ahead. It's your turn.
Good afternoon, Tom and Kevin, or good evening, good night. I did a sample of my transmission, and they added it to the samples that I normally do for my engine. And it shows as unknown, of course, you know, with the filter change and everything. I wanted to see if there's anything that I might have done wrong, or I had a couple extra bottles of the old one, switched to the Echo OPS.
Okay.
And,
okay. I think what you failed to do was register that component. If you used the same unit number but didn't register the transmission with them, if you look at there in the computer on the registration form you have that's in each bottle, is an account registration form and there's a component registration form. If you registered it as a transmission, they would have put it on there and you'd see a T after the number, like 1, 2, 3, 4, E if it's an engine, T if it's a transmission, D if it's a differential. So if you look, if there's a T on it, they realize it was a transmission. But if they didn't put the T on it, they actually thought it was engine oil, and that's probably a disaster.
Yeah, I filled up the registration, and I make sure that I put, you know, transmission and the transmission
mm-hmm.
model. And
they put They put it on the same report, but the report should have a T next to it, right?
Oh, it doesn't have a T. Sample, regular sample number 4.
That's,
you
want to
look
very
it up,
top
Tom?
Yeah, what city are you from?
Deltona, Florida.
Well, let me see if I can find it. Hold on a second.
My number is 0017.
Is this Larry?
Under Luis Medina.
Medina, yeah, Medina.
Do you want me to work for you, Tom?
Well, I was the wrong one. You said Deltona. I only have one Deltona, and it's not him. I don't think I have your report here for some reason. Was it sent in through the Horizon Polaris Labs or?
Yeah,
I have it. It's Luis Medina, Prescott Boulevard.
That's correct.
All right, well, let me try it the other way. Hold on. I tried it by Deltona. It's not there. So anyway, Kevin, as I'm looking for this, what we're talking about with the registration forms is, you know, as long as you sent it in with the component, because they need to know the same thing about the transmission, because transmissions wear differently than, you know, different manufacturers have different wear patterns on their engines as well, and on the transmission.
Right.
So they need to have that information, otherwise they can't do a good report on it.
Got it.
Yeah, and on the regular one, because I sent one to Houston, and the other one I sent to for the regular.
I see. Okay, it says D tone on the thing. That's why we'll have to fix that. Okay, I have the one you did on the transmission. One was the fourth one. Was that in October?
No, that was in February. I did the sample on February 20th. Sent it on April 6th. Was when it was received.
Okay, I see it. Okay, report up. Yeah, usually they would change it to a T, but you're right, they have it as an E here, so there's something not right there. What we can do is we can go ahead and tell them that. Let's see what they put on here. Yeah, see, they showed it as all kind of copper and everything else. That's, they think it's still the engine. We have to go back to them and make sure they fix that. Let me print this. What I'll do is I'll send them an email on Monday and have them go back and make sure that the transmission is there. What kind of transmission is it?
It's an Eaton Fuller 13-speed manual.
Okay. I'll have them go back and look, because if you look at it, you'll see the copper is 586.
Right.
Which probably means you're having some kind of bearing problem there somewhere. But they'll look at that against the engine. That's why they have that rated the way they do. But I'll have them go back and change that for you, make sure they comment as a transmission.
Okay.
Yeah, because you can see the answer there. They're talking about cylinder liners and pistons, and they didn't pick it up as a transmission for some reason. I'll see if I can find out why for you and get it fixed.
Yeah, I mean, I filled out the whole, the most part that I could, and made sure that I put that it was a transmission. And of course, you know, before, because I had the original OPS, and then I switched
right
to the Echo Pure. So the other one I
right
sent to Salt Lake, that one I sent to Houston.
Well, it just sounds to me like it was a human error. They didn't check. When you checked off the sample point, there's one for engine oil, one for transmission. They probably looked at it real quickly and thought it was the engine and didn't bother to check it out very closely. But I'll get them to fix it for you.
No problem. That's basically it. Other than that, it's working awesome.
Okay, great. Glad to hear it.
Thank you very much, Tom and Kevin.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Let's see. We've lost our feed on the website in the chat room, the audio feed. Lisa, if you would, let people know in the chat room that if they want to continue listening to the audio, they should be able to go to the audio road tab. They could pop out their chat room if they want to stay in there. But the video feed went down for some reason, and I can't get it back up. So there won't be any audio if they're in the chat room watching the webcams. Those are down. So just let them know in the chat room that they can go to the audio road tab to continue hearing the audio on the web. Let's go to Ryan this time. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Tom, how are you guys doing?
Good, Ryan. How are you?
Good.
I'm doing well. Kevin, I'm sure you'll remember me. I picked up 7/10 of a mile for the gallon driving the mountains, right? And that's kind of what I'm curious about. I noticed that when I used to run this truck wide open and, you know, just really power up and down the mountains, I used to blow a lot of oil out my blow-by. It'd be all over the front of my tank, to the underside of my truck. And I've noticed since driving the mountains properly and keeping my manifold pressure down, I run about 5-10% throttle up and down these hills. Is that going to give me a false sense of security in my oil sample, as it's not going to show as much soot in fuel if I do have a blow-by issue?
No, I think if you were blowing that much oil out, you were probably having some blow-by actually out the blow-by tube itself, building up crankcase pressure and coming back up. I can't see it being that much of a difference here. I'm missing your question.
Yeah, that's what I mean. When I used to really get after the throttle climbing the hills, and I'd run 48 to 52 PSI manifold pressure, it seemed like
right.
There was a lot more crankcase pressure, there, hence blowing more oil out the blow-by tube all over the front of my tank. Since I rolled out of the throttle and I don't run as much manifold pressure, I'm not getting as much blow-by because, there's less air and fuel getting by the rings in the crankcase.
Correct.
Yeah, that's a good. Yeah, but you're not covering anything up though. I mean,
yeah, you're not covering anything
working,
up. Just,
yeah.
Yeah.
It'll still have an accurate reading on what's actually going on with my oil.
It'll probably be more accurate because what you're doing before is you were blowing the oil out and having to replace it with fresh oil. So you're putting more fresh oil in. So you were actually putting more fresh oil in, so it's actually covering up more than this would.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. I put 2 gallons in between a 15,000 to 17,000 mile oil change, whereas now I'm running about 1 gallon every 9,000 miles or so, and by the time it's time for an oil change, I wind up only having to put one in. So.
Right.
So what's really going on is the sample is still an accurate depiction of what's going on in your engine. You have changed the way the engine is operating, and you've changed what's going on in the oil, and this is that you're still going to get a good, accurate picture of what's going on in the oil, and it's really not covering anything up. This engine will last longer with you running it like this.
Yeah. I've noticed, too, another thing I want to point out in slowing down over the mountains and not working the thing so hard, not only is it going to make the engine last longer, I mean, there's so many other components, your transmission, your clutch, your fan clutch, your fan hub especially. The fan works way less than it used to. I don't necessarily think about.
No, we don't think about it, and I don't even talk about it much. And when we talk about slowing down, I mean, there's the obvious, immediate, measurable return on investment. People can see it literally in one day. You drive hard one day, fill up your tank at the end. Drive easy the next day, fill up your tank at the end. You can see an immediate result. But what we don't talk about, because I've never found a way to measure or quantify it, and I don't like putting out numbers that I can't really quantify, but there has to be a huge reduction in maintenance cost over the life of the vehicle by doing that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, it's just hard to put a number on it. I've never figured out a way to say, if we drove a truck for its whole life at 70 miles an hour or we drive a truck for its whole life at 55, here's the difference. I've just never figured out a way to do that. So, but it is good to mention it once in a while because I'm not sure that a lot of people think about it.
I mean, really, realistically, the only way to do it with any kind of accuracy is to have the exact same truck, two of them, and run them both exactly from day one, that way, at your baseline and the difference. The other way to really get good fuel economy is keep the wind to your tail. I've noticed this tank is incredible. I have a long wheelbase truck, and I pull a container. So, I mean, obviously,
right.
I've been feeling, running through the mountains and whatnot. Man, I've had a tailwind this whole trip. I got a W9, and I think I'm getting over 7 miles to the gallon on this trip. It's incredible.
Yeah, that's wild. I tell people all the time, screw the delivery. Turn around and go with the wind, because it's all about fuel mileage.
Exactly. I'm telling you. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's see. I've got – oh, no. Okay. Who do I have on the line here? We are going to go to Rick this time. Rick, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going, Kevin?
Hello? Rick, what's on your mind? Yep.
All right. I got a couple of questions for you guys real quick. I'm about to install the OPS-1 tomorrow. Well, actually, the Echo Pure.
Mm-hmm.
Any guidelines you think? I mean, it looks pretty simple so far. Anything you think I should know about before I take this thing on?
Well, actually, what you should do, if you look in your packet, you're going to see a phone number for one of our field service technicians.
Okay.
You should give them a call before you start. You'll lay everything out in front of you. Take a couple of minutes to read through the manual, the installation manual that we have in the box, and you get a general idea of what you're doing, and call, you know, the field service technician. He'll walk you right through it.
Okay. Now, on one of the podcasts you guys had, I hear you talking about mailing your samples in. Is there a way to do this through the post office?
Well, actually, you can do it at the post office. You need to put it in some kind of bag or box, and you can just drop it at the post office. Use the labels that are on the oil sample bottle. There's address labels on there for the closest lab to wherever you are, and it doesn't matter which lab you send it to. So wherever you happen to be the closest, just put that label on and just bring it to the post office. They're usually about $2.45 or $2.50 to be able to just do a regular postal. And if you wanted to use the priority mail, it's like $4.95, and it gets there within 2 days or 3 days. The key is that it gets there within 2 to 3 days if you want to make sure you get the information back. So you get it back timely in case there is something wrong.
Okay. So do I have to, can I use like any container to anything that small to collect my sample?
Well, actually,
No,
when you bought the kit, you bought the system from us, you probably bought the starter kit, correct?
Yes, sir.
Inside the box, you're going to see there's going to be the bottle, the outer mailing bottle, which is a black bottle. Inside there, there's like a medicine bottle, and all the labels and all the forms you need are inside the that black bottle, or a rubber band to the outside of the black bottle, actually. So everything you need is in that kit. And then there's also in your kit, there's going to be boxes that you fold up and put the bottle in and put the UPS label on. If you bought the starter kit, you have UPS labels. You can drop them in a UPS drop box or give it to a UPS driver or UPS store. If you're going to use the post office, then you got to put it in a box and bring it down to the post office.
Okay. And, Kevin, for you, my question for you is oil. I'm trying to use synthetic oil, but it looks like I'm going to be spending close to $300 for the oil for this thing. Is it much that of a difference between synthetic or synthetic blend or regular Delvac?
I over the long period. You know, there's not a real quick return on investment with synthetic. It's one of the little things that I like to do. It returns its investment over time. I think the advantages, you know, we will see some improvement in fuel mileage. Really nice cold weather starting. I think there's better protection. The oil really isn't going to last any longer. Even though I think it's a superior oil, it's not the oil breaking down that is the problem. It's usually contaminants that overcome the oil. So you're really not going to see the synthetics last any longer. But over time, I think the advantages pay for themselves. Now, one of the ways you can do this cheaper is to, if you're going to change your oil when you install this, go ahead and put in whatever you've been running. And then I would say in that same brand, you could start to use synthetic as your makeup oil. Let the lab know that you're doing that. And eventually, you're creating your own synthetic blend, and the more you do it, the more of synthetic you'll end up with.
Okay, that sounds like a pretty good deal.
Tom,
right?
I know that's my goofy theory. Is there any reason not to do that, Tom?
It will work as long as you're using a similar brand. If you go from, say, a mobile and a shell, it may not work because they use different additives. But as long as you stay within the same one, you should be okay. But it's important that when you send the sample in, you say 15% of this and 85% of that. Do the best you can to guess so you know when the lab looks at it, because they're going to see additives that are in the synthetic oil that are not in the mineral oil, or vice versa. And you're going to have discrepancies in the oil sample. But as long as you know what it is, as long as you know that you're doing that, and you don't react, you know, start dumping the oil out because it says there's too much magnesium in it or something, when it's supposed to be there, you'll be okay.
Okay.
One of the reasons I kind of came up with that was that we were noticing in some high mileage engines when people switched from mineral to synthetic, they saw high oil consumption. And it took a while to overcome that, and it was expensive because they were dumping in a gallon of synthetic every 5,000 or 6,000 miles. So it was almost like an easier break into synthetic, and it seems to be working really well. We're not seeing that high consumption.
Okay, so you know anything about this Royal Purple synthetic?
Yeah, actually, I used Royal Purple for years, and I liked it. I mean, I'm not using it now just because I've been trying to test some other oils, but I really liked it.
So is it going to be a problem for me switching, because I've been using Mobil Delvac all this time? You think I should gradually change over like you were saying earlier, or if I just straighten me?
I probably wouldn't with those two oils just because I have no clue what the difference in additive packages would be on those, and you might end up with some pretty goofy readings if you do it that way.
Yeah, they're totally different. I would just go straight to that one, but plan on using a lot of it in the very beginning.
Oh, it's going to burn. It's going to burn it out for a while or something.
It's how many miles your ring?
Almost a million.
Oh yeah, you may see pretty high oil consumption in the beginning.
Okay. All right, Kevin, just want to say I've been listening to you for a long time, told you this before, and you're the reason why I'm still in business. Got a W900, and I'm averaging anywhere between 6.7 and 7.2 to the gallon, and pulling a step deck and all behind, slowing down. I haven't done any air filters or turbo 3000, just basically slowed down. I changed my fuel lines, stay on top of my maintenance, and it's been working pretty good for me.
That's fantastic. Love to hear it.
I appreciate it. You guys have a good one.
You too. Good talking to you. Lisa, I've been busy over here. Can you jump in? Do I have any other questions we haven't got to yet?
You do. How about Dale, which is our second runner-up from the Audio Road contest? He is... Where is he?
He's on line 13. I've got him. There he is.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. What's up?
Hey, quick question for Tom. My 04 that I had, ISX Cummins, I had one of the lobe on a camshaft go south on it. The oil sample didn't pick that up. Is that normal? Is that just one of those catastrophic failures that happens between samples?
Well, you got to remember that the lobes on a camshaft have that chromium-type covering on them. And once that chromium chips off, they go pretty quick. So it could be a bad roller, or it could be the bad cam side that caused it. So it's kind of hard to say. The normal wear, you got a roller against a roller, the roller on a surface, it shouldn't have any wear at all. But this all takes is the bearing, the roller to go bad, and then you've got a roller that's not spinning, and it burns those things off. So, yeah, those are one of those things that you might not see.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because there was no indication it was going to let go, and it did, and I was just curious if I didn't pick something up on the sample, or if that was just one of those things.
Well, it probably picked it up after. I mean, if you looked at it later, you probably see, you're going to see chromium, you're going to see iron, you're going to see some, you know, some lead, those kind of things. But if that's what happened, I mean, usually that's what happens, is that roller goes bad, and then it doesn't turn on the cam properly, and it starts to grind it away.
Okay. All right. Well, that was my question. I've upgraded to a 2010, and the soot has just come way, way down. And so far, so good.
Great.
And that was one of the things that I was going to ask you, Tom, if we're starting to get any data back from the 2010s yet as far as oil samples to see.
See, Kevin, here's the problem that we have. Everything they ask for, they don't ask for the year of the engine. We do, but the oil sample doesn't ask for the year of the engine. So it's hard for us to say. The only way we can really determine it is when we look at the engine and it's a model, that's a new model truck, and we look at the we look at the amount of miles that are on it, because the oil sample itself, no one ever asks for the year of the engine, so we can't pull that data up. It's bad, but you know, there's nothing we can do about that.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see. My guess is that we're going to see some improvements on the oil sample. I'm hoping we do anyway, since we're going back to kind of the 04 level EGR numbers.
Right. Well, you also, every once in a while, we'll see some trends on some things, like certain engines, and I'll have somebody call me, and I'll look it up, and we'll have four or five guys with the same kind of problem with the same engine. Cams were one of them. The charger coolers is another one that comes up a lot. That are, you'll see in groups, you know, if I have this engine will pull up a report and show all the engines with all the miles on them, and all of a sudden in one block between 200 and 300,000, everybody's having the same problem. So we can see those kind of things, but we don't know what engine it is, you know, what year engine it is. But we do know that you see those kind of things all the time.
Got it. All right, we are down to 2 minutes, Tom. So we've talked all about the system, the cost, the benefits, all those things. Now, how does somebody get more information specifically, or if they want to order a system, how do they do that?
Well, the best way to order is to call Artie directly at 203-346-1832. And if that's too hard to remember, you can go to 866-OIL-PURE. And you can also click into the sales department. That'll eventually get to Artie, and he'll be happy to help them get that information.
Got it. Very good. Why don't you give that out one more time?
It's 203-346-1832 or 866-OIL-PURE.
All right. Outstanding. Anything you want to close with?
I just want to ask everybody out there that sees this Let's Truck message that come out. On the bottom of our particular banner, it's a thing that asks for a survey, and we'd like to, everybody to fill them out to try to help us improve our company, and also, you know, just let us know how you feel about the product. It's a quick survey. It only takes a couple of minutes, and it's kind of important to me because I already has a bet with somebody that he can get more than 100 of them, and so far he's only got about 15. So I'm hoping he can get some of you guys to pick up the, go on that email and just look at that banner and fill that little questionnaire out for us.
Outstanding and good timing. And check out the website for OPS. You guys have updated the website. It looks good. A lot of great information. The easiest way to get there is go to letstruck.com and go to sponsors. That'll take you right to the new website. Tom, thanks for joining us with all the good information. We'll do this again soon.
It's always a pleasure.
All right. Great to have you. We are all out of time. The live show's coming up in 30 minutes, so join me for that on Sirius 147 XM 171. And remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.